welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, here we are, team. And there is so much beauty in the sky right now, and Venus, of course, is the star. Venus representing beauty, art, intimacy, kinship in the realm of Taurus, which is sensual incarnation, the delight of intimacy with fur and felt and mangoes and I love from Michael Gruber's novel, The Good Son, which is pretty great, but in guiding us into Across Borders, he mentions that in Islam, Alam e Nasuf is the material world, and Alam e Malakut is the realm of angels, the ground reality of universe. And so part of the sky dynamic of now is that they are interweaving, you know, Alam e Malakut, the realm of angels, the ground of reality, you know, wants to interweave and descend into Alam e Nasuf, the material incarnate world. And when we do that, it creates Sut e Sarmadi, which is eternal sound that permeates all worlds with great beauty. So before we dive into our pretty fabulous show, I have new ancient allies that were my great buddies at the Envision Festival. They were the headliners, Beats Antique, and we're doing a shout-out because they're doing a hometown show at the Fox in Oakland on Friday, March 30th at 8 p.m., and their website is beatsantique.com. So they are new, great, cahooting allies we want to form into teams, absolutely. So, yeah, as we notice, you know, most economies are really war-based, a kind of toxic hyper-yang, you know, mimic of Mars. But of course, economia is meant to be the realm of Venus, beauty and art and kinship. And one of the great patterns of Venus, thanks to my colleagues Hal Barr, Daniel Giammario, and Gary Caton for pointing this out, is that Venus is going out of bounds. It's a technical, factual term that means when a planet, you know, deviates in north or south declination, way out of bounds of the ecliptic, the sun's path. So Venus is heading out of bounds. We love that, literally and symbolically. She will be 4 degrees north of the ecliptic by the time we get to May 4th. And Venus is really the part of us about pouring cool water on the fires in Colorado and everywhere as we head into an increasingly hot world. May we be agents of cool. So we also honor our recent ancestor, a great poet, Adrian Rich, who was saying, you know, art must be resistant to dominance. And we go, yes. And thank you, Adrian. Honoring her entrance into the realm of ancestors, Venus is so beautiful in the sky now, blessing her exit and say, not merely resist, but sane, reverent beauty, you know, assume cultural leadership once again. So, more than perfectly today, I am welcoming hosting the fantabulous Karen Brown with the Etsy World News that we shall co-weave, Mending the World, Micro-Venusian Economy of Handmade Intimacy to Rise from the Compost of Hyper-Yang Infantile Mars War-Based Economies. And apparently I said to her, the resurrection of community spirit through shared traditions. Karen Brown is an award-winning designer, creative director of the Center for Eco-Literacy. Her work has been included in the Smithsonian Institute and Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum and featured in the New York Times, Architectural Digest, House Beautiful, and on Today on NBC. She believes that the handmade movement is a fundamental force for transforming society and the economy. Yes. Ah. Okay, welcome, Karen Brown.
Thank you so very much.
Yes. So I know a little bit about Etsy. You know a great deal. For our listeners who know and do not yet know, Etsy, what is Etsy?
This is what Etsy is. And first, a point of clarification is that I just want everyone to know that I am not an employee of Etsy, and I haven't been hired to speak on their behalf. I actually think in some ways that makes me perhaps even a more natural authority in that I am, number one, a massive, massive fan of the site, and also from time to time I have the privilege of writing for their blog. So everything that I'll express is my own points of view, my own experience with Etsy, completely unsolicited and unfunded by Etsy, all of these comments. So what I can tell you about it, it's Etsy.com for anybody who doesn't know, Etsy.com. It is a place, an online marketplace for all things handmade. And that doesn't mean handmade in some anonymous studio in some far-flung part of the world. It means handmade by someone just like you and just like me. And a place where we can see each other's work and exchange what we do. Also on Etsy, they sell, people can sell vintage things, older things, and also materials to make things with. A couple statistics, I've been a member for many years, and anybody can be a member. It's absolutely free to just go to Etsy and become one. But in the time that I've been involved in it, its growth is pretty staggering. It has over 14 million members now.
Wow.
Yeah. And over 800,000 active shops. So there's over 800,000 people, just like you and just like me, who are making things with their hands and offering them on Etsy. And for me, one of the most profound things, if we talk about something like a new economy and not a war-based economy at some point, is that the money that you give that person goes directly to them. There isn't a markup through layers of stores and some strange distribution. And also that it's possible to form what I will call a real relationship with the person you're buying something from, so that there's human-to-human contact.
Well, you did say when we were backstage, you said that sometimes when you buy things, you get a handwritten note, and sometimes they throw in extra gifts. Can we just talk about the cozy colon and the woman the woman who knits organs and who is an organ donor in the way that we would want?
Yes, well, there are many fantastic and beautiful things of all kinds on Etsy, but there are also people there with epic senses of humor.
Yes.
And mad skills. One of my favorite shops is run by a person named Sarah, and the name of her shop is An Optimistic Cynic. And Sarah is a young woman who hand crochets human organs.
I know we're on radio. And when we get to the story of your coat and the alpaca, we're just going to conjure in everybody's mind these fantastic images. But you do want to go there. And if you go to my Facebook Coyote Network News thing, you can see the post. You can read the whole article that we're going to be animating of the journey of Karen's felt coat and the alpaca, whose name you know, who contributed to that. And then what we're going to do also is tease this out into this is really essential. Mm-hmm. And when people feel overwhelmed now going, we might not save the world, but we're going to bless it. And these microeconomies that we'll get to that are so crucial, in the face of relentless, whatever we go, and the stats you just gave are great, 14 million members and growing. Yes.
And growing, yeah. Almost 1.5 billion page views a month. And the blog that I have the privilege to write for has about 4 million readers a month just for that. But, I wanted to say the intro that you gave is so very perfect, the idea of the realm of the material and the realm of the angels. And for me, in this movement of handmade, the idea of having an individual creator who brings into the world through inspiration, through the realm of the angels, the work of the hands.
Yes.
For the purpose of reinventing material culture.
And I said we want to stay micro intimate, but then tease it out. This is Etsy World News, because again, when we were speaking backstage, I go, I can tie that to Syria, because in Syria, which is a under acute duress, but it is a handmade culture, and the Arabic phrase you can use every half hour is Islamu Idain, may the divine bless your hands that have made such beauty. Food, things, Aladdin's lamps, just everything is pulled in. And so in so many ways and for so many reasons, handmade is under threat. But here comes Etsy. And what an interesting thing to connect people in Syria to Etsy. But yes, no, the spiritual experience, the angels and the hands, yes, absolutely. But did we might need to say more about the cozy colon and the gift that you got.
Well, yes. I mean, yes. Well, two things. One is you and I have a friend who had some surgery recently, so I presented him at during the winter holidays with a hand-crocheted colon, and he actually said that it made him feel whole again.
Yes.
And so I wrote to Sarah, and I said, this is what he said, and I was surprised that he had expressed something that was kind of so intimate that way. And she said, you know, I get that a lot. And even though I'm, you know, she's kind of doing this thing and it's partly whim and so forth, that some of these little things that she makes have actually very, very serious uses. There's doctors in teaching hospitals who might use something like a heart that she crochets because it's anatomically perfect. And it's just somehow more accessible and it gets people's attention. It's funnier. But also sometimes they can explain to patients like how your heart works. And it's not as threatening because it's in this very warm and intimate kind of medium. Also, another thing I'll say about Sarah, just to kind of talk about the free gift part. From time to time, when you buy something on Etsy, you get like a little bonus gift. And I know someone who had a lot of dental work this past year, so I had a tooth, a kind of big tooth that would fit in your hand crocheted by Sarah. And the free gift that she threw in was a pair of hand crocheted tonsils.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, you know, art is healing and whimsy. There's a lot of whimsy here. Art is healing, and to be able to fondle, we're going back to the essential roots of magic, which is to step into greater intimacy, and that once also, you know, dolls and probably crocheted, you know, organs were considered magic, that it was a way of becoming intimate with this thing and stepping into intimacy. And we go, anyway, so yes, the hand crocheted colon, the hand crocheted with the stones, gallbladder. The crocheted gallbladder with little gallbladder stones. Fabulous. It makes you smile at pathology and therefore begin the healing already. It's just a fabulous thing. Mm-hmm. So we love that. And then, you know, the you'd said, and I think we do want to, even without the pictures, people can go to many things and Etsy and find your blog, but also it's on my webpage, coyotenetworknews.com, and Facebook page as well. The journey of your coat, we do have to bring this into play, because you did such a great job of spinning this micro particular intimacy into economic implication.
Here's the story of the coat. Back last fall, well, it actually even goes a little bit farther back than that. I was at all things at an event on a ranch and met a young woman named Rebecca Burgess, who's sort of become the expert in my area on local fiber. She runs something called Fiber Shed, which is like food shed or watershed. That's a resource for kind of learning more about where fiber comes from. And it's funny because even places that have very well developed local agriculture, we often are only thinking in terms of food. And fiber is the other part of agriculture that often we never talk about. Where I live, we grow some of the best fiber in the world, and almost 100% of it is exported, a lot of it to China. It just leaves here immediately and comes back in the form of finished goods or never comes back at all. So I began to ask myself the question, what would it really take to make a garment that was really local, especially since we have no infrastructure locally for making fabric anymore? You know, 15 minutes from where I live, we used to have a mill that made fantastic fabric out of local cotton. I even have a tiny sample of the cotton from that mill. And that mill was active and working and producing beautiful fabric as recently as the 1990s. And it's completely gone now. So what I did was first I contacted Rebecca to try and find some people who could help me. And she put me in touch with this group of independent women. And it's interesting because everybody in this project is female, including the animal who contributed the fiber. So essentially, kind of where the fiber came from was a ranch in Sonoma. The rancher's named Vicki Arnes, and her ranch is Alpaca Shire Ranch. And I bought from her what's called a fleece, which is a shearing of her beautiful black alpaca, whose name is Chamomile.
And we should say that Chamomile was in no way harmed by this process.
Chamomile was in no way harmed by this process. And in fact, when we get to I have met Chamomile, and Chamomile is dandy. Actually, Chamomile has, like, is is so cute, you can't stand it.
Oh, chamomile's so cute, I wanted to throw everything over and just raise alpacas. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's so charming. Ah. Mm-hmm. Okay,
and,
yes.
And alpaca's like very, very fine. It's almost a microfiber. It's very fine, very lightweight, very warm. But basically all I had was, you know, like in the nursery rhyme, like, dab you any wool, yes sir, three bags full. I just kind of had a bag of fiber.
Yes.
So then I was connected up with an absolutely amazing person named Catherine Ellen Jolda, who is very young. I think she's about 30, but one thing that's very remarkable in her biography is she spent 6 or 7 years living on the Navajo in Arizona herding sheep. And what she doesn't know about wool and fleece isn't worth knowing. So I met her. She lives on a sailboat, and I met her at her parents' house in the East Bay. And she took this fiber and carded it on a device that she has invented. Because first, it's like it's just a mad tangle sort of in a bag, right? And you have to get all the fibers going in the same direction. So Catherine, who's just a first-class inventor, invented something called the cyclocarder. And it's a stationary bicycle that has two carding drums mounted on it. And carding drums are like drums that have a gazillion needles going in opposite directions, kind of. And she gets on her bike and pedals and feeds in the alpaca, and it comes out this beautifully combed fiber.
And I don't know if I'm leaping ahead, but I my excitement is so strong that to make the felt for your coat was about 9.6 miles.
Yes, she has a miles per garment.
Right, miles per garment. I love this. Okay, all right. Yes, onward.
Yes, and in fact, she demoed it for 3 days, the cyclocarder for 3 days at the Heirloom Expo that we had up here. And she said she rode 67 miles in 3 days carding wool as a demonstration. So she's very fit, needless to say. So once all this stuff was carded, you lay it out, like you lay half of it, let's say, going west and the other east to west, and the other half on top of it going north to south. So you've kind of created a little web here on top of all things, just a kind of bamboo window blind that you would get someplace like Cos Plus, you know, like the biggest bamboo blind you can find. Lay this stuff out, pour over some boiling water with a tiny bit of soap in it, then roll it up, and you whack that thing about a million times. They call it agitating the fiber. But she's very, very familiar with fiber chemistry and protein chemistry. And what happens is there's some alkaline in soap, right? And it kind of swells the outside of each individual fiber, which makes it kind of catch and knit naturally with the fiber next to it. So you're creating a thing where you're agitating it with heat and soap, and this is an ancient, ancient process. They believe the first fabric ever made was felt. This is how you make felt. And it's a 1,000-year-old process of heat, agitation, and a little bit of alkaline, right, which in this case was just an organic olive oil soap. And you roll it up and you agitate it, and then you peel it off and put it at a right angle and roll it up again and agitate it, then at a 45 over and over again. So when you're done, you have fabric. You have beautiful alpaca felt. Then you rinse it in water that has a tiny bit of vinegar in it, and that'll neutralize whatever was left from the soap. Then this beautiful fabric that she made in her driveway, right, went to a person I hardly know how to describe named Molly Mrozinski, and Molly is the kind of person who can make you clothes out of absolutely anything. She specializes in kind of avant-garde garments made out of unconventional materials. Like, she can make you a prom dress probably out of old kitchen linoleum or something if you had it. Insanely resourceful.
No. Right.
And she made for me, we went through the whole thing. It was a very couture experience. She made me 2 custom muslin patterns. We had 3 fittings, 2 on muslin patterns, the 3rd one on the garment itself. She made it in her studio in Oakland. And it's a really gorgeous, I think, beautiful coat. And another thing I love about it is that chamomile, the alpaca, was black, and my coat is black, and it didn't require any dye.
Yes.
It's gorgeous black forever. And then as the story goes, the last thing we did was all go back to the ranch together, all of us. And we spent time with Chamomile and Vicky the rancher and kind of closed the loop and the story that way.
Now, this is so important. As our longtime friend of show, Martine Prechtel, says, you know, to feed the indigenous soul, which is, again, how we redeem the world, you know, have around you those things with which you are intimate and you know who made them. Well, you win the mega intimacy coat contest. It's an inspirational, you know, going, really great. And then, you know, and take us on out. Then it's so great. And the pictures of Chamomile are so great. And it's wonderful. And all these women cahooting together. And then let's go into the, yes, the important, crucial, dodgy realm of money, cost, and calming everybody down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the question I asked in the piece was, so what did all this handmade wonderfulness cost? So this coat, including all the materials and everybody's time, cost me, it was not cheap. It cost me about $900. Now, I looked around on Etsy, and that puts it roughly in the middle of similar hand-felted coats. For me, it's by far the most precious and expensive thing that I have in my closet. And I can imagine that some people are thinking, well, most people can't pay that much for a coat, so this is just some kind of elitist exercise, you know, and I hear them. And, you know, I can't afford more than one garment like this myself. But other people might be thinking, hey, I would love to make, I make clothes and I would love to make this much on a coat, so tell me more. And so the question I would pose is maybe it's right there, right between what we want to pay as buyers and what we feel we deserve to be paid as makers, is maybe that's where we can start a conversation about a new economy and one that we invent ourselves and own ourselves.
Yeah, no, I think this is so crucial because again, we as agents of Venus, regardless of temporary gender assignment, you know, we want to be cool and calm and, you know, again, compost the hot reaction of the world. So a you know, and all boring reactions. We want responses, not reactions. So a common reaction among all of us, because we're trained, is like, $900. Oh my God. You know, it's like, no, easy. Because yes, all that you say, and I want to tease this even more too, that going, well, we could create an economy where this could happen, you know, for many people hand making. And as you say, I mean, it's part of the frustration of artisans, you know, at craft fairs, where sometimes people are really very rude, who come up and go, you want $20 for this mug? You know, it's like, no, everybody, you know, we also have a metaphorically hand-knit harumphitude composter, going, compost the harumphitude, there we go. So you do a lovely delineation of, you know, the people, hours, the 9.6 miles, the alpaca. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just remind us of how much love and art and energy and experience went into this, and then let's tease it out into, you know, past everybody's harumphitude into pertinence to all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ask readers, and this isn't rhetorical. I'm really asking what do they think the coat should cost, and I break down what's in it. For example, Vicky, who's the rancher, only takes about 20 or 30 minutes to shear an alpaca, but she's been taking care of that land for 27 years. Including feed and vet bills and fencing and everything that goes into that. Catherine carded and felted for 12 hours. Molly, the person who sewed the coat, designed and sewed it for 35 hours. And it is, in a way, a couture garment, right? So what do you think that the knowledge and the talent and the effort and, you know, I got to say it, the love are worth? Because I don't think anybody really made that much money on it, if you consider also they were all willing to go back out to the ranch to meet Chamomile.
Right.
Everybody was available all the time. We you know, it was a great team experience.
Yeah, and we're spiraling it forth. I mean, the model is, you know, Jupiter, again, is the realm of curiosity and luck and generosity, and it's in Taurus, you know, incarnational delight. So you do this wonderful thing, which then becomes a story, which then we're spiraling forth, and you are too, which then inspires other people, which then becomes a story. And this is how we're going, team, you know, which is the beautiful thing, the story, the inspiration, the permutation, you know, so for everybody's heart to be inspired. And as you were saying, too, you yearn for everyone to have the opportunity to make something with their hands. And this is not some avoidance of the world. This is the way of weaving the world back into wholeness.
I think it's the way of weaving the world back into wholeness, and I think some of these things might be inevitabilities for us, too.
Yes.
In the way that the world is changing and the way that what's going to be available to us in terms of materials and energy and so forth in the future. You know, something that Catherine said while she was whacking away at the felt in the driveway, she said, you know, she has this very lovely way of talking, and she said, you know, I think in earlier times, a good coat used to last you as long as it would take you to save for the next one. So a really well-made coat might last you a few years, and in a few years, without stressing yourself out, you could save up for another good coat, right? I'm having trouble finding anything wrong with that. If we had better, fewer, but better-made things, and that everyone could be paid fairly for what they make. And one thing I love about this coat is that I have a wonderful coat, and I did not set foot in a store to get it.
Yes.
I worked directly, or I was worked with, I was served magnificently by all the actors, you know, in this drama. But I didn't go into a store, and we were completely outside the dominant economy and the, you know, established supply lines to get it, and it was attainable. And another thing I had said to Catherine while she was whacking away in the driveway was, you know, I've observed that when people learn how to grow their own food, sometimes they really calm down and begin to feel more secure, because they know they can take care of themselves that way by producing some of their own food. Does she feel that way about clothes? And she stopped whacking for a second and looked at me and said, I think anywhere I went in the world, I would be able to dress myself for the rest of my life.
Whoa. And this is very essential to fairy tales.
Isn't it?
I mean, well, because it's such an ancient thing, the weaving, the carding. There's mm-hmm. always some component in the longer important, you know, heritage passing on of fairy tales. And certainly coats are very mm-hmm. important mm-hmm. in a fairy tale to mm-hmm. be, and they're a crucial component of blessing. You know, as mm-hmm. John O'Donohue says, you know, when terrible things, ghost of loss, you know, war, terribleness, then may the ancestors place a coat around your shoulders that will mend your life.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. A primary incarnation of blessing. And, mm-hmm. you know, and part of the metaphoric feast of now is the, you know, where today the sun squares 90-degree angle exactly Pluto, and the sun's image, metaphors for each degree, is, you know, new expressions for very old traditions. That's mm-hmm. that's today's, you know, meme. And this changing, and also what I love about this story, Forever and Ever, it's a never-ending story, and an ancient story brought alive again in, mm-hmm. you know, intimate usefulness, is this crosses all political borders. You know, I've been having a curious research time crossing borders, talking to Tea Party people and everything. Okay. But the ornery, disobedient thing that has turned into rancor and blah, 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 but it's the same part of those people. If we put politics to one side, that they would love this. You know, going, mm-hmm. great, independence, you know,
absolutely.
Autonomy, mm-hmm. preparing in a beautiful, fun way, handmade, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty irresistible.
It is for me, and you know, what I wanted more than anything else out of doing this is I wanted to have a way to be able to just talk about, I wanted a demonstration garment, kind of. And I feel that it demonstrates exactly how close we are, and also to some degree how far away we are from being able to attain that kind of, I'll call it for now, self-reliance, perhaps. Not self-sufficiency, but a kind of self-reliance and connected interreliance with one another, because it's, we were able to produce what, for me, I think is just an absolutely fantastic garment, working in the most basic way possible, but just by changing a couple things, like instead of having it be a one-of-a-kind couture de garment, what if Molly had, or we had a pattern? I mean, it's such an unusual fabric, she had to do it absolutely from the ground up. But what if there was someone somewhere who just had the pattern and could make several? And that would reduce the cost. They would still have a wonderful...
Oh, hold that thought, because we're going to have a very, very short break. Our wonderful guest is Karen Brown. We are talking about handmade and cultivating a culture of mending intimacy in many, many ways. And we will be right back. Well, welcome back, Allies to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and I guess Taj Mahal went free range, and we had that lively break music, but we'll return to Taj next week. But anyway, our wonderful guest is the fantabulous Karen Brown, and we are doing Etsy World News, mending the world back in through handmade and teasing it out into all of the crucial economic and sensual implications. As a friend of mine always says, you know, do we live in an economy or a culture? A culture is what we make together. And so we go, yes, again, that restored intimacy quality. But you were right. You were right in the middle of saying this could be efficient when we...
Well, it could be maybe more accessible. So, for example, if a wonderful clothing designer still working on a small and intimate and local and personal kind of scale had a collection of patterns like any other designer, so that they could make more than one coat and it wouldn't have to be custom made. But they could still have their autonomy as a designer and a business person, and you could still obtain a unique and beautiful garment from them that had sort of their DNA in it, because that's one of the wonderful things about experiencing handmade, is you get such a personal vision of the world from each person that you're acquiring something from. Maybe it could be, on the one hand, everything that Catherine did, the Carter and the Felter, the textile maker, I love it so much that she did it and that I got to witness it. But I think sometimes there might be certain materials or things that we could mechanize maybe a little bit. Like maybe we don't want to try and make all of our sewing thread by hand. I think that that's something that people might be willing to allow to be mechanized to some degree.
And you had to use the silk.
Yes, we did use a piece of silk, which Catherine says acts like rebar. It helped the fibers have something. They actually went all the way through it. It's completely invisible. You would never know it was there. But that was something that we couldn't obtain locally. And to me, that's not at all a failure of the project. That's saying, like, look, this is the state of what it is right now. Some of this we could do locally. Some of it we couldn't. Working with a pretty experienced group of people, this is what we can do. I think we're always going to have trade with one another. We're not going to be insulated in little tiny communities that have no exchange with the outside world. But how could we really start to bring back... what it made me think about was, what would it be like if there were regional garments again? The way there used to be.
Well, when you sent me something to the Ukrainian wedding gown, I go, that's worth getting married for. that's worth getting married. Yes, it makes marriage look like a good idea. For the Ukrainian on Etsy, we go, that's wonderful. But I want to just do a little side pitch. You know, if we are, you know, Mars in Virgo now, retrograde, going return to micro crafting. Mm-hmm. The wonderful homily, yard by yard, life is hard, inch by inch, mm-hmm. life's a cinch. So the silk realm, I would just want to put it going, if we had time and we honor befoiblement, it would be wonderful to have the time to have nonviolent silk. Because when I went to Rug Studio in Turkey, many of us do not know And we should at least know the cost and sacrifice of beauty. That silk is made by boiling to death the little silkworms, you know. And there is a nonviolent silk movement, which is very time intensive and, you know, of just slowly unwrapping the thing and letting the worms live. And I just wanted to put that there. We should at least know that they die. They were boiled to death, you know, to make these beautiful silk things. And maybe in the fullness of time, when we're sitting around with only handcrafting to do and whatever, we could make nonviolent silk. I just want to put that there.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the powers, I think, of doing something locally. Michael Pollan has a really good definition of what an industrial food is. He was asked, what's an industrial food? And I thought he would say something about all the chemicals or the processes that go into it. And I love his definition. He says, an industrial food is any food whose origins are so complex or obscure that it requires expert help to ascertain. And we have that kind of obscurity and complexity in most of the things in our environment right now, at least in this country, because they all come from someplace else, through processes or made by people, who under working conditions that we generally don't know and cannot know what those working conditions are. And when you start to bring things home, there's a natural transparency that starts to be revealed. You know, even things having to do with environmental pollution, if it really kind of is happening in your own backyard, there's a lot better shot that that's going to get cleaned up if you're having to live with it rather than that you have outsourced it.
Yes. And I did also want to bring in and honor my late great ally Dennis Livingston, who worked predominantly in Baltimore as an inner city activist, but did many, many creative things all over the place. But one of the things he did was, because he was a good wheeler dealer and definitely a builder and a hands-on person, he got the city of Baltimore to turn abandoned prisons over to him, which he turned into craft ateliers for working class people to start their own businesses. So, you know, Aunt Sue's relish or whatever. But he also would work with builders and say, you know, in self-employment, here's the predictable economic crises, you know, after 3 months, after 6 months, in which businesses go down. And he said if we modeled it more like a solar system in which businesses shared resources, you know, then you can avoid this. You have a central sun that, so there's no need to duplicate, you know, even among neighbors, you know, why have three hand lawnmowers? Why have three copying machines? Why, you know, so I just wanted to shout out to the ancestor Dennis Livingston who did so many creative things, and helped the entrepreneurial hands-on crafting of so many inner city neighborhoods for his whole life. So, yay.
Yay. Dennis.
So, and then also, yes, go wherever you want. But I know that we wanted to bring up Natalie Channon, which is just a great story.
Yes. Real quick, first, I just want to say the beautiful hand-knit wedding dress from Ukraine is made by someone named Muza, M-U-Z-A, on Etsy. So if anyone wants to see, it's like kind of like a fisherman knit sweater from head to toe. It's just an incredible thing.
Wait. Oh, but I just gotta step in too, because meaningful, you know, all cultures. I mean, what we've lost in industrialism, and again. Moving back in, you know, all art was, you know, a little hello from the big thing. So the ornamentation, you know, of symbols, the cup one drank morning beverage from, the dress one wore, all meaningful, you know, and tied into tradition and context and spirits and juju and all of that, that when we make something beautiful, you know, invisible power comes in. And I just want to, you know, we'd say Scheherazade would have been an Etsy supporter, because at the very end of the 1001 Nights, she gets truly married because the sociopathic dingbat King Shahryar, she has redeemed his heart. And he goes, oh, I've been a terrible murderous dingbat and you have been my savior. And she gets truly married in a dress that is woven with all of the plants and animals of this earth. So the crazy, then return to sanity king marries the earth. Oh, there we go. Okay. All right.
Yep. Well, again, marriage of heaven and earth. I think that's the kind of the theme for today, the angels and material culture. And it is a kind of marriage of heaven and earth. The inspiration realized in form, in three dimensions that persist in space and time.
Yes.
Why not?
Yes.
Let's try that.
Let's try that. Yes. Well, whenever whenever you want to get to Natalie Channon, seventh, that's wonderful. Oh, yeah, because I forgot if I interrupted you on your way to somewhere else.
No, no. I'm delighted to talk about Natalie Channon. I do not know her personally, so in a way, I'm just gossiping wildly behind her back right now. But there's a beautiful a story and video about her on Etsy right now. So it's something, if you went to Etsy and searched for it, you could find her. There's also stuff about Natalie Channon all over the place. But her story essentially is that she's someone who, for a portion of her life, had what you might call a very conventional career in fashion and design. She worked in New York. I think she spent about 10 years in Europe as a stylist, and then went through a phase where she kind of wanted to work with recycled materials and repurposed materials and was trying to, you know, cut T-shirts up and make new outfits out of them and things like that. But it required a lot of hand sewing and custom sewing. And she went around 7th Avenue and places in New York looking for workers and couldn't find anybody who was willing to work on these things with her. And she was looking at what she was making one day and said, you know, these stitches that I'm stitching look like quilt stitches. And I think that means that I need to go back home. And home for her was Florence, Alabama. So she left New York and 7th Avenue in big-time fashion and went to a little town in Alabama where she was from and set up in an abandoned T-shirt factory, because that's a part of the country where they used to grow a lot of cotton and make a lot of T-shirts. And over time, the cotton went away, and then after NAFTA, the textile and garment jobs went away. And she went essentially with a needle and thread and an idea, which was, would it be possible to make garments entirely by hand? Everything, including the seams. And she still works in kind of jersey, cotton jersey, like T-shirt material, very beautiful cotton jersey now in different weights. But she has created a very high-end clothing line. She's on the cover of Women's Wear Daily. She's in Vogue. She's everywhere. And has created a kind of cottage industry where local, what she calls ladies locally, can work in their homes and make things. She has a process where people can bid on what it is she has to offer. She goes, I need these garments made, and people can bid on them, and they just make a decision on who, based on their skill and what it would cost and so forth. They choose people, so it's partly self-selecting and partly driven, you know, it's kind of a nice reciprocity between what they need and her business and so forth. And she's providing jobs in her area of her hometown for people to preserve hand skills. In some cases, things that could be lost, you know, between the cracks of time, all of these hand skills. It's a beautiful story, and it's got so many dimensions. I just want to say one thing that she does as an example of what can go into a handmade garment, because it's so beautiful. And she talks about loving your thread. And, you know, thread, we were talking about thread a minute ago. And the way thread is made is your basic sewing thread, you know, when you see a spool of thread, there's two threads actually that make up one thread. And one is twisted one way, and it's called an S-twist. And the other one is twisted the other way, and it's called a Z-twist. And you kind of bind those two things together, and it's the tension and the torque that actually holds those things together. And what can happen, if you've ever done any hand sewing or work with thread, you know that those threads can sometimes twist while you're working on them, and your thread gets all twisted up. Or it can even get brittle and break. So she has this process that's quite beautiful, and she calls it loving your thread. And you thread your needle to the length of thread that you'd want it to be and knot it at one end. And then you stroke it. And she says, you stroke it. And what she does is she thinks about the person she's making the garment for, or how beautiful they'll look when they wear it, or how grateful she is that she has the opportunity to hand sew. And you just keep stroking that thread like that. And you do it for, you know, a minute or two. And the thread relaxes and straightens out. And it's so that it'll never tangle again. And now you can sew, and it's relaxed, and you're relaxed, and that goes into the garment. And someone asked her, do you think you can measure the love that's in a garment? And she said, I don't know if you can measure the love in one garment, But I think if you're running your business and your life in a way that you try to put as much love into every part of it that you can, over time, you will have something that you can measure.
I love that.
Isn't that
no, the blessing. And again, it's the kind of astro-mythic spring discernment about, you know, saving. You know, blessing does not mean saving. It's a different emotional quality going, oh, we can bless everything. We may feel futile and overwhelmed and sad if we go, we have to save the world. But we go, no, but we can bless the world. And this is, you know, because then we don't have the tragic, romantic, melancholy, salvation, fixation thing. The blessing. And then we're in this animism that the thread loves being blessed. And it's, again, blessing into, well, we love that. And yeah, and in the same sense, you know, we can all, you know, radio juju now that whatever we do, whatever we work at, may we love, you know, may we love every dynamic listener to this show. We love you. We're relaxing your thread. You know, may we love what we do and, you know, send, be agents of blessing and spiraling in tangible form in the world. It feels so much better. Yeah.
I know. And just like another handful of confetti on the when I was waiting for the show to start today, I was thinking about who might be listening, who is making something right now.
Yes.
Because a lot of people make things when they have the radio on.
Right.
So just a handful of confetti to you all of just today a special love and hello to every person who might be working right this minute, making something with their hands.
Or gardening. We have a lot of gardeners.
Yes, many things.
We have a lot of gardeners who listen to the show when they're gardening, and a lot of painters and so on. But let's tease it out into, you know, everything art, as the Balinese actually truly do say. We have no art. We simply do everything as beautifully as we can. Whether you're in a car or doing a thing, you know, everybody hereby, you know, Venus awakens and stirs and hums and purrs inside each person. Everyone an artist, you know, an artist of, you know, and getting to make up, you know, quirky titles for oneself. But, you know, whatever we're in, whatever comes before us, may we be agents of, you know, blessing. May it go well for you. Even funky, horrible things, you know, let's go, may it go well for you. It can be fierce blessing, you know. You know, may, you know, it's the thing we turned around from Wanda Sykes, who was like, you know, oh, Rush Limbaugh, I want his kidneys to fail. And we go, no, the trickster thing would be, no, we want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to work so well that it cleanses all the poisons out of his system and leaves him in befuddled innocence. Yeah. And we could even order him, you know, a cozy kidney, from Etsy. But again, the fierce blessing is something we're allowed to set in motion in the world in practical and super practical juju ways. Anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So we go, yes, we want our kidneys to work well. Yes, we'd like to have a cozy, knitted, hand-crocheted kidney. Yes, we'd like, you know, so whatever comes before us, you know, let's think of ourselves as agents of blessing, no matter how befoibled or beautiful it is in its current state. And then we're in the fairy tale, which is the realm of real power right now.
Well, that's just too beautiful. And you know, the passion in that, and the passion of sometimes what is an otherwise unseen act, you know, the very just kind of private in your house making something, or you're in your garden gardening something. I have one sentence I wanted to read to you, and it's out of a book called The Hand by Frank Wilson, which is kind of the authoritative work on the hand. One point he beautifully makes is, you know, there's all this brain research about what the brain is, as if it were who you are and separated up there. As Ken Robinson says, you know, your body is just a way of getting your brain to meetings, that kind of thing. But he talks about, you know, the body is an entire ecosystem where every part is connected and of equal value. And he has this amazing anecdote that he talks about where he was showing a video of something that's called musician's cramp. And it's the way that sometimes musicians' hands get all cramped up and they can't play. And he was showing this video to a group of musicians, and one of them passed out. Well, he fainted away while he was watching it. And it's like, well, that was kind of unusual. But then he showed the film to other groups, and it happened a second time and a third time with completely different audiences. And he talked about the body having a profound empathy for the body of others. And this one sentence I think is so beautiful that he wrote, that people are changed significantly and irreversibly, it seems, when movement, thought, and feeling fuse during the active long-term pursuit of personal goals while using their hands.
Mm, yes.
To bring integration again and reconciliation again to the body itself, body and mind, and, you know, passionate endeavor. I will say this about Etsy. They are some of the most passionate people I have ever encountered in my life.
And I would say to the shout out to the astro, the sky earth story taking place, you know, in each one of us and out in the world, that the reason I was so enthused to have you on right now is that everything that you're saying and dedicated to giving voice to is so, you know, some things always true, but times when they are truer, so perfect now, because now is, we go, there is terrible and dire beauty in world, like, and the sky story says, yes, there is all that, and create the templates, you know, which will be animated, the each person's home, whether you're in a yurt or a car or a tent or a palace or whatever, is their loving temple world headquarters, you know, that it make it dedicated, just even the hand moving around and artful arranging of objects, very, very powerful now and very fairy tale, because whatever template of desire personally, community-wise, collectively, we set in place, you know, will magnetize its fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So that's the promise of this spring, going, yes, yes, you humans, you can't get yourself out of this mess you've imposed on everybody, but cooperators are standing by, and if you make beauty, it will be filled with great power, and marvels will occur that are larger than just being human. So, it's perfect. And you did say that Natalie Channon, one of the key things is that she went back to Florence, Alabama with just a needle and thread.
Just a needle and thread. And it made me realize that I actually could, if I had to, figure out how to clothe myself with just a needle and thread. And, you know, my mother, I think this is also something about the, like, the cost of clothes. Like, I had a coat made that was expensive. There's always been a high end, and there might be a middle, but sometimes there didn't used to be a low end in clothes, because we weren't having anonymous people in far-flung places make our stuff. If you were in a place where you either needed to spend less or wanted to spend less, you made it yourself. And my mother used to say, my mom grew up during the Depression, and they had a big family and didn't have a lot of money for clothes. So this is what they would do. There was some comic, and I wish I knew which it was, in the Sunday paper that was about a beautiful kind of career girl. I don't know what it was. And they loved her clothes. So on Sundays, they'd get the Sunday paper, and then they would lay the paper out on the dining room table. And they had 10 kids, right? So this dining room table was gigantic. And they would cut the patterns out of the newspaper and then sew their own clothes. So they use these illustrations, essentially, which sometimes are easier to follow than photographs, the illustrations in the comics to get their design inspiration, use the newspaper itself to make the pattern, and then, as a family, sew their own clothes. And she said, well, she was better dressed than anybody.
And I want to tie that into the World Bank in Costa Rica.
Let's go.
Let's Etsy World News. Because, you know, when I was in Costa Rica for the Envision Festival, where I met the great teammates, because we were all bonded by ordeal, and then ecstasy, you know, but my teammates, Beats Antique, who are giving a concert this Friday in Oakland, hometown concert, big deal, at the Fox Theater, March 30th, 8 p.m. Little shout out to new ancient friends. But, oh, yes. But my friend Chaz lives in Costa Rica, and he was like in humble farming community. And so some years back, the World Bank came in and said to the Costa Rican government, you must make all of your farmers in this particular province grow, you know, low grade coffee for Starbucks. And so the edict came down. All farmers, drop what you're doing and you know, plant this low grade pesticide coffee for Starbucks. So they did. And then World Bank came back in 2 years later and said, we've changed our mind. There's not enough profit in it for us, you know, buy. And they pulled all their money and went away, leaving all the farmers, you know, all of Chaz's neighbors like, ah, you know. And Chaz said, what was that like? How'd you get through? And they said, well, it was very, very difficult for 2 years. And then We went back. We went back further than before all this horrible stuff started. We went back to indigenous farming, and we went back to seed sharing. So we're better off now than we were before. And this is also just part of our ongoing theme. You know, there's harmony, disharmony. To love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater dynamic harmony than before the whole horrible thing. You know, so I just love that going, you know, Mars retrograde now says, you know, to go north, go south, to go outward, go inward, you know, and lets everybody slow down in order to speed up. There we go. And returning to, yes, careful, handmade, reverent, playful, community, artisan things. So again, if you had a blessing to spiral forth or a wish, what would that be, oh Karen Brown?
Well, I would like every person who's connected to and involved in the kinds or seeking positively inclined towards the kinds of things that we've been discussing, to feel profoundly the appreciation that we all experience when someone steps forth to beautify and humanize material culture. I would like them to actually get a buzz off of that. So my blessing would be anyone who's, you know, part of the fellowship, to just really experience the most profound appreciation for your creativity, your vision, your love, and your willingness and delight in engaging in reimagining what it would be like to create our human world again.
And
what do you think?
I think that's great. Ashe, we say, the power of words to make them manifest and incarnate into the alame nasuf, material world. We invite them on in. And it's so important, everybody, team, to consider with the stars, because in visiting the homes of, crossing borders, you know, hedge fund managers, and I always want to go hedgehog funds, that would be better. But the buildings themselves are as abstract as the money that made them. You know, this abstraction of money has led to the hyper-yang war economy, and it's these small and large, you know, micro weavings of the world back together, these mendings before us, these small tasks of reverence. You know, Mars and Virgo, ruler of ritual magic, says small tasks before us done with blessing and intention, such as you mentioned, Karen Brown, you know, connect to whole big healing. You know, it is good for everyone. So it's profound, and there's no more wonderful work. And to all those who are growing good food for self and others and making beauty, and absolutely what you said, yes, the Church of Craft, cultivating a culture of mending and intimacy, you know, that again, inch by inch, this is all really, you know, crucial and wonderful. The angels descend through the hands. Well, thank you.
Even through hand-crocheted human organs.
Yes, hand-crocheted human organs. That's so wonderful. So thank you very much. You can read about Karen Brown's fantastic, with the pictures of the alpaca and all the great beings there, too. Etsy.com, If you go to my website, coyotenetworknews.com, it's right there on the homepage. You can follow me on Twitter at Stand Up Coyote. It's a new thing. The Vernal Equinox address is available right now. You can order it. You can call 888-741-GUIDES or just go to coyotenetworknews.com. Thanks again, Karen Brown, and thank you so much. Wonderful Margot Kelly in D.C. and Mike Biggs in Berkeley. Wolf, wolf, wolf. We will reconvene next week. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Yay.